I got off the track fast, worked around to the east of the hut. I saw Marshall again. He moved from one hole to another and watched me, just gazed out at me. "Step out of the hut, Major," I called. There was silence for a long moment. Then he called back to me.
"I'm not gonna do that."
"Step out, Major," I called. "You know why I'm here." He ducked back into the darkness. "As of right now, you're resisting arrest," I called. No reply. No sound at all. I moved on, circled the hut, worked around to the north. There were no holes in the north wall, just an iron door. It was closed. I figured it wouldn't have a lock. What was there to steal? I could walk right up to it and pull it open. Was he armed? I guessed standard procedure would make him unarmed. What kind of deadly enemy could a gunnery observer expect to face? But I guessed a smart guy in Marshall's situation would be taking all kinds of precautions. There was beaten earth outside the iron door where people had made informal tracks to places they had parked. What an architect would call pathways of desire. None of them led north towards me. They all led roughly east or west. Shade in the morning, shade in the afternoon. So I stayed on open ground and got within 10 yards of the door. Then I stopped. A good position on the face of it. Maybe better than going all the way in and risking a surprise. I could wait there all day. No problem. It was January. The noon sun wasn't going to hurt me. I could wait until Marshall gave up. Or starved to death. I had eaten more recently than he had. That was for sure. And if he decided to come out shooting, I could shoot him first. No problem with that either. The problem was with the holes in the cinder block, in the other three walls. They had looked the size of regular windows, big enough for a man to climb through, even a big man like Marshall. He could climb through the west wall and get to his Humvee, or he could climb through the south wall and get to mine. Military vehicles don't have ignition keys. They have big red starter buttons, precisely so the guys can throw themselves inside in a panic and get themselves the hell out of Dodge. And I couldn't watch the west wall and the south wall simultaneously, not from any kind of a position that offered concealment. Did I need concealment? Was he armed? I had an idea about how to find out. Never trust a weapon that you haven't personally test-fired. I aimed at the center of the iron door and pulled the trigger. The Beretta worked. It worked just fine. It flashed and boomed and kicked, and there was an enormous clang, and the round left a small bright pit in the metal 10 yards away. I let the echoes die. "Marshall," I called, "you're resisting arrest. So I'm going to come round, and I'm going to start firing through the window apertures. Either the rounds will kill you, or the ricochets will wound you. You want me to stop at any time, you just come on out with your hands on your head." I heard a burst of radio static again, inside the hut. I moved to the west, kept low and fast. If he was armed, he was going to shoot, but he was going to miss. Give me a choice of who to get shot at by, and I'll pick a pointy-headed strategic planner any day of the week. On the other hand, he hadn't been completely inept with Carbone or Brubaker. So I widened my radius a little to give myself a chance of getting behind his Humvee, or behind the old Sheridan tank. Halfway there, I paused and fired. It was no kind of a good system to make a promise and then not keep it. But I aimed high on the inside face of the window reveal, so that if the round hit him, it would have had to come off two walls and the ceiling first. Most of the energy would be expended, and it wouldn't hurt him much. The 9mm Parabellum was a decent round, but it didn't have magical properties. I got behind the hood of his Humvee, rested my gun hand on the warm metal. The camouflage paint was rough. It felt like it had sand mixed in with it. I aimed up at the hut. I was down in a slight dip now, and it was above me. I fired again, high on the other side of the window reveal. "Marshall," I called. You want suicide by cop, that's okay with me. No reply. I was 3 rounds down, 12 rounds to go. A smart guy might just lie on the floor and let me blast away. All my trajectories would be upward in relation to him because I was down in a dip, and because of the window sills. I could try banking rounds off the ceiling and the far wall, but ricochets didn't necessarily work like billiards. They weren't predictable, and they weren't reliable. I saw movement at the window. He was armed. And not with a handgun, either. I saw a big, wide shotgun barrel come out at me. Black. It looked about the size of a rainwater pipe. I figured it for an Ithaca Mag 10. A handsome piece. If you wanted a shotgun, the Mag 10 was about as good as it got. It was nicknamed the Road Blocker because it was effective against soft-skinned vehicles. I ducked backward and put the Humvee's engine block between myself and the hut. Made myself as small as I could get. Then I heard the radio again, inside the hut. It was a very short transmission, and faint and full of static, and I couldn't make out any actual words, but the rhythm and the inflection of the burst came across like a three-syllable question. Maybe, say again? It was what you heard after you issued a confusing order. I heard a repeat transmission. Say again? Then I heard Marshall's voice, barely audible. 4 syllables. Fluffy consonants at the beginning. Affirmative, maybe. Who was he talking to? And what was he ordering? Give it up, Marshal, I called. How much shit do you want to be in? It was what a hostage negotiator would have called a pressure question. It was supposed to have a negative psychological effect. But it made no legal sense. If he shot me, he would go to Leavenworth for 400 years. If he didn't, he would go for 300 years. No practical difference. A rational man would ignore it. He ignored it. He was plenty rational. He ignored it, and he fired the big Ithaca instead, which is exactly what I would have done. In theory, it was the moment I was waiting for. Firing a long gun that requires a physical input before it can be fired again leaves the shooter vulnerable after pulling the trigger. I should have come out from cover immediately and returned lethal aimed fire. But the sheer stunning impact of the 10-gauge cartridge slowed me down by half a second. I wasn't hit. The spray pattern was low and tight, and it caught the Humvee's front wheel. I felt the tire blow, and the truck dropped its front corner 10 inches into the sand. There was smoke and dust everywhere. When I looked up, half a second later, the shotgun barrel was gone. I fired up at the top of the window reveal. I wanted a tight ricochet that came down vertically and drilled through his head. I didn't get one. He called out to me.
I'm reloading, he said.
I paused. He probably wasn't. A Mag 10 holds 3 rounds. He'd only fired 1. He probably wanted me to come out of cover and charge his position, whereupon he would rear up and smile and blow me away. I stayed where I was. I didn't have the luxury of reloading. I was 4 down, 11 to go. I heard the radio again. Brief static, 4 syllables, a descending scale.
Acknowledged, out.
Fast and casual, like a piano trill. Marshall fired again. I saw the black barrel move in the window, and there was another loud explosion, and the far back corner of the Humvee dropped 10 inches. Just dumped itself straight down. I flattened in the dirt for a second and squinted underneath. He was shooting the tires out. A Humvee can run on flat tires. That was part of the design demand. But it can't run on no tires. And a 10-gauge shotgun doesn't just flatten a tire, it removes a tire. It tears the rubber right off the rim and leaves little tiny shreds of it all over a 20-foot radius. He was disabling his own Humvee. And he was going to make a break for mine. I got up on my knees again and crouched behind the hood. Now I was actually safer than I had been before. The big vehicle was canted right down on the passenger side, so there was a solid angled wedge of metal between me and him all the way to the desert floor. I pressed up against the front fender,
lined myself up with the engine block, put 600 pounds of cast iron between me and the gun. I could smell diesel. A fuel line had been hit. It was leaking fast. No tires, nothing in the tank, and no percentage in soaking my shirt with diesel and lighting it and tossing it in the hut. I had no matches. And diesel isn't flammable the way gasoline is. It's just a greasy liquid. It needs to be vaporized and put under intense pressure before it explodes. That was why the Humvee was designed with a diesel engine. Safety.
"Now I'm reloading," Marshall called.
I waited. Was he or wasn't he? He probably was. But I didn't care. I wasn't going to rush him. I had a better idea. I crawled along the Humvee's tilted flank and stopped at the rear bumper, looked past it, and scoped out my view. To the south, I could see my own Humvee. To the north, I could see almost all the way to the hut. There was an open space 25 yards wide in between, like no man's land. Marshall would have to traverse 25 continuous yards of open ground to get from the hut to my Humvee, right through my field of fire. He would probably run backward, shooting as he went. But his weapon packed only 3 rounds, fully loaded. If he spaced them out, he'd be firing once every 8 yards. If he loosed them all off at the start, full blast and unaimed, he'd be naked all the rest of the way to the truck. Either option, he was going down. That was for damn sure. I had 11 parabellums and an accurate pistol and a steel bumper to rest my wrist on. I smiled. I waited. Then the Sheridan came apart behind me. I heard a hum in the air like a shell the size of a Volkswagen was incoming, and I turned in time to see the old tank smashed to pieces like it'd been hit by a train. It jumped a whole foot off the ground, and the fake plywood skirt splintered and spun away, and the turret came off its ring and turned over slowly in the air and thumped down in the sand 10 feet from me. There was no explosion, just a huge bass metal-to-metal thump, and then nothing but eerie silence. I turned back, watched the open ground. Marshall was still in the hut. Then a shadow passed over my head, and I saw a shell in the air with that weird slow-motion optical illusion you get with long-range artillery. It flew right over me in a perfect arc and hit the desert floor 50 yards further on. It kicked up a huge plume of dust and sand and buried itself deep. No explosion. They were firing practice rounds at me. I heard the whine of turbines in the far distance, the faint clatter of drive sprockets and idlers and track return rollers, the muffled roar of engines as tanks raced towards me. I heard a faint boom as a big gun fired. Then nothing. Then a hum in the air. Then more smashing and tearing of metal as the Sheridan was hit again. No explosion. A practice round is the same as a regular shell, the same size, the same weight, with a full load of propellant, but no explosive in the nose cone. It's just a lump of dumb metal, like a handgun bullet, except it's 5 inches wide and more than a foot long. Marshall had switched their training target. That was what all the radio chatter had been about. Marshall had ordered them away from whatever they were doing 5 miles to the west. He had ordered them to move in towards him and put rounds down on his own position. They'd been incredulous. "Say again? Say again?" Marshall had replied, "Affirmative." He'd switched their training target to cover his escape. How many tanks were out there? How long did I have? If 20 tank guns quartered the area, they would hit a man-sized target before very long, within minutes. That was clear. The law of averages absolutely guaranteed it. And to be hit by a bullet 5 inches wide and more than a foot long would be no fun at all. A near miss would be just as bad. A 50-pound chunk of metal hitting the Humvee I was hiding behind would shred it to supersonic pieces as small and sharp as K-bar blades. Even without an explosive charge, the sheer kinetic energy alone would make that happen. It'd be like a grenade going off right next to me. I heard a ragged boom, boom, north and west of me. Low, dull sounds. Two guns firing in a tight sequence. Closer than they had been before. The air hissed. One shell went long, but the other came in low on a flat trajectory and hit the Sheridan square in the side. It went in, and it came out, straight through the aluminum hull like a .38 through a tin can. If Lieutenant Colonel Simon had been there to see it, he might have changed his mind about the future.